Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. And by the way, let me tell you right now, there's the March Mega Sale that's on at thealexjonesstore.com. Of course, the only way that we get funding, we do not have advertisers. We do not have corporate sponsors. We do not have billionaires giving us their inheritance money. No, all we have is you, the American people. When you go to thealexjonesstore.com, get yourself a fantastic product at a great price. So really, it's a win-win-win-win situation. You win by getting a fantastic product and supporting the InfoWar. We win by continuing to be able to tell the truth and have the great discussions that we have with our incredible guests, like my guest, Andrew F. Bronca. You can follow him on X at The Bronca Show and YouTube.com/The Bronca Show. And we're talking the Iran war. And I got to be honest, Mr. Bronca, I didn't expect you to be as in favor of it as you are. I don't want to put words in your mouth. And strictly because I feel like we're fairly aligned on pretty much everything I ever see you talk about. I think you hit the nail on the head. So I'm just kind of confused on how we're misaligned here. And you know, I don't want to be wrong, and I'm not certain I'm right. So I'm happy to have this conversation. I guess to me, it's like one of the things. I think the last time you were on, we were talking a lot about immigration and the flood of Indians and stuff like this. I mean, is that not going to be a downstream effect? I'm worried about the 90 million potential refugees. If we just create a failed state, how many of them are going to go to Europe? How many of them are going to continue on to America? I mean, isn't this going to cause a lot of downstream problems that you're concerned about?
I mean, what Europe does is Europe's problem. I don't care what they do. America should not be allowing not only no asylum in America, no refugees in America. We shouldn't be allowing any third world immigration into America at all. That's a decision we get to make. The asylums don't force their way into our nation. We can close our borders. We've demonstrated that. If we choose to let more third worlders into our nation, well, we've just decided to make our nation more like the third world. I think that would be a bad policy. But the fact that we're acting outside in the world doesn't mean we have to allow tens of millions of asylum seekers in. Those are different decisions.
I suppose that's true. I still don't like the creation of the conditions that brings about the, because you know, at the end of the day, I guess that's my thing, is I'm like, okay, maybe Iran, you know, ends up being less of a threat than it used to be, but like compared to everything we have to deal with here, it's just the disconnect between what we have to deal with here and what's going on in Iran. Like maybe if we go to war with Iran after we somehow created conditions here in America where we don't have any more refugees. Maybe if we controlled our immigration system and had deported everybody, then after we get done with that, we can go take care of Iran, knowing that the refugees aren't going to be a problem. But you know what I mean? I just feel like this is not the time to be dealing with this stuff with Iran when we have all this other stuff going on.
I guess my response would be, we don't live in a perfect world where we get to solve our problems one by one in their entirety before we proceed on to the next problem. The world's complicated. There's lots of spinning plates. There's lots of things that are broken. I noticed when I was waiting to come in originally in the green room, you were the show was talking about payoffs for legislatures that had done bad things with children. That's horrific. I'm the father of four children. I think anybody that harms children should be buried under the jail. Yep. But we can't say, let's solve that problem before we deal with the immigration problem, before we deal with the tariff problem, before we deal with the Iran problem. The world doesn't allow you. It's not like an old school karate movie where the bad guys come at you one at a time and you get to defeat them one at a time. Right. It's more complicated than that. And if you ask the Trump administration, they would say, and again, I'm not inside the Trump administration. I don't know exactly their thinking. All I can go by is what they tell us. They say they felt they could no longer afford to wait. They didn't have the luxury of further patience because of the scale at which Iran was building its offensive missile and nuclear capabilities relative to our ability to build defensive measures against them. If we did not intervene now, it would be too late. Maybe they're lying. Maybe they're making it up. But maybe they're telling the truth.
Yeah, I mean, they could be. Because from my interpretation, I think they're just kind of throwing anything at the wall to see what sticks. I mean, Marco Rubio said, well, they were going to attack, or Israel was going to attack, so we had to attack because we were going to get it. I mean, it gets complicated and you know, circular at a certain point. But, you know, again, it just I get the impression that none of this was well planned. I mean, now we're asking the Kurds to get involved. That seemed like an afterthought. Like, we didn't know we were going to need something like that. I mean, tell me, because my interpretation is that he thought this was going to be like Venezuela. I was against Venezuela. I'm happy to admit that the Venezuela operation was a magnificent success. Even though I was against it, even though I would go back in time, I wouldn't say to do it. It was great. It worked really well. Nobody on our side died. Like, boom, done. If that had been what happened to Iran, I probably wouldn't have much to say right now. It seems to me like that's what they thought was going to happen, and they did not expect the situation we're now in. Do you disagree with that?
I think I would, because in Venezuela, we went in with one particular mission to seize one person, Maduro. We did that. And that was the end of the operation, the military operation. That wasn't our mission in Iran. Iran, it was to decapitate their leadership structure and to degrade their ballistic missile, their drone capabilities. That can't happen in a weekend. I think they knew from the beginning it was going to take at least weeks for that to happen. Trump says 4 weeks. You know, like, it's any kind of fight. Anytime you're in a fight, even if it's a pretend fight, like you train martial arts, I do BJJ. When you start wrestling with someone, you don't know how it's going to end exactly at the end. Even if you know you're better than them and you're overwhelmingly likely to win, you don't know what all the intervening moves are going to be. You have to respond to the things they do in response to your actions. So there's a certain shake-the-box element to this. There's a certain uncertainty in the step-by-step progression. And at each step, almost like a chess game, what you're hoping to do is make the best move based on the information you have in that moment, and then you see how things develop, and then you make the next best move. But you can't predict from the start of a chess game exactly where all the pieces are going to be at the end. You just have to take it step by step and hope to advantage your position at each move.
Right. Certainly that's true. I get the sense that, you know, maybe they thought if we take out the Ayatollah, then, you know, they'll want to negotiate. Because it seems to me...
Well, isn't that true, though? I mean, I've seen reports that now they're trying to negotiate.
Well, I've seen the opposite. Because there was a report that Trump asked for a ceasefire and the Iranians said no. Because, you know, and maybe they're not rational actors in this, but, like, that's one of the things, right? You know, it's like in a fight, you think, okay, I'll just, you know, run up and sucker punch this person and knock him out. And it's like, but what if they don't get knocked out? What if they just turn around and now you're in the fight? And now it's like, you can't just back off. You can't go, oh, well, we tried and it didn't work, especially because we see the way that they're pounding Israel right now, which, again, I mean, this is another wrinkle to it, right? Is if this was all in totally like being orchestrated by Israel, they're kind of getting their butts kicked. I mean, Ben-Gurion Airport's on fire right now. So, I mean, how does that play into it? But it seems like Iran just sort of has this irrational, like, you know what? We're not even going to, like, it's a fight to the death now. And so now, like, we're in it. We can't just back out or else Israel gets totally destroyed. So it's like now we're in it, one, you know, to the end. And what the end looks like is sort of ugly no matter what the outcome is. So I think we got in over our heads.
Maybe. And I don't see it that way because it doesn't look incoherent to me. And if we were just spasmodically responding to things that totally surprised us, I think it would be a lot more incoherent. As far as Israel, listen, I mentioned earlier, if Europe makes bad immigration decisions and decides to accept tens of millions of Iranian asylum seekers, I don't care what happens to them from their own bad decisions. It doesn't mean I want harm to Europe. I don't have any animosity towards them, but if they make bad decisions, that's a them problem. And I feel the same way about Israel. I don't wish any ill on Israel, but if Israel makes decisions and they turn out to have bad consequences for Israel, that's an Israel problem. That's not my problem.
I agree, but they are becoming bad situations for us, right? I mean, we wouldn't even be in this situation as it stands now, let alone, you know, where we were last week, if it weren't for, you know, Israel's actions in Gaza and our unwillingness to restrain them there. So to me, it seems like this is being motivated by Israel. It seems to me like Israel is seeing this as their sort of last chance to take out Iran, which obviously they've harbored a desire to do that for 40 years. And they're seeing their PR collapse overseas. They know that the younger generation is not going to have the same support for Israel that they do now. So they need to become hegemonic and uncontested in the Middle East. So that seems to be the motivation, as far as I can tell. I don't see America benefiting
from this. The motivation
for
who? For America?
Yeah, for America, too.
The motivation for America?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I mean, that could be. But I see an American motivation that doesn't require that it be driven by Israel. I mean, what the administration has been saying is we made a decision to decapitate their leadership structure, degrade their ability to employ ICBMs and drones against America, against our interests, against the Strait of Hormuz, against Europe. Their ICBMs certainly can reach our NATO allies in Europe. Those are all American interests that have nothing to do with Israel. So does Israel play a role here? I would expect so. They're another American ally. All of this would not happen but for Israel. I see a coherent rationale for America to pursue this path in its own national interest that doesn't require our decision-making being driven by Israel.
Well, I mean, to me, it seems like, I guess you can make that argument. It's not sufficient to actually justify the attack itself. Like, maybe retroactively or retrospectively, you could say, well, we can benefit from this, but I don't see the risk versus reward equation coming out on the reward side personally, just because we could be here literally 20 years from now in the exact same quagmire, having spent $1 trillion, right? I mean, what's the difference that you see between how we're entering Iran right now and how we entered Iraq back in 2003?
We sent in a ton of troops. We sent in ground troops. That's the difference. Again, as I said earlier, if we send any substantive numbers of ground troops, anything beyond like embassy protection Marines, not zero, because sometimes you have to have a few troops there. But to actually occupy and secure and seize and control ground, substantive ground in Iran, I'd be absolutely against it. That should not happen. That's a bad plan. It was a bad plan the last 18 times we did it. It would be a bad plan now. But we're not doing that. So that's what I think the distinction is.
So that I guess is where I'm confused, because it's like, if you don't put troops on the ground, then what are you doing? I mean, again, as I'm playing out the different options, it's like, okay, if you don't put troops on the ground, that does away with any possibility of a, occupied peace or anything like that. All you have then is the air battle, in which case, we're back to Libya or Syria or any of these other like failed states that, it's just sort of, we routinely have to pop up and crush whatever terrorist organization, manages to cobble itself together in the ashes. Again, it's just like, if we don't put troops on the ground, like, what's the final outcome?
Well, first of all, I think we are degrading Iran's ICBM and drone capability, its threat capacity against the Strait of Hormuz, which is very important to world trade. I think that's worth doing in and of itself. But we're also shaking the box. Now, it's like a game of pieces, right? You shake the box and you open up the box and you got to put the pieces back together from an unpredictable pattern. There's a chaos element here. What we are doing is we're priming an environment in which the Ayatollah's gone. Most of its senior leadership is gone. Who's going to step into that vacuum? I don't know, but somebody will. There's a prospect. They're better for us, for America's interests, than the Ayatollah was. Could they be worse? Could they be worse than people spending decades threatening death to America, attempting everything in their power to secure nuclear arms, having a theocratic apocalyptic view of what the world should look like? I think it would be hard to get much worse than what was there before. So we've removed that. I'm not sure what we're going to get. I don't think the administration is sure what we're going to get, but I think we're hopeful we'll get something that's better. If that's not the case, we'll have to address that situation when it arises.
Well, the Ayatollah had a fatwa against nuclear weapons previously. I mean, there's no guarantee that the next one will be similarly inclined. But like, how does this play into things like Lebanon? I mean, they just told, a million people to get out of Lebanon. You've got the and it's not Naftali Bennett. It's Smotrix going out and saying we're going to turn this neighborhood of Beirut into the new Khan Yunis. They're going to give it the Gaza treatment. I mean, the arguments about Iran being a threat to America, I mean, Lebanon, it's not a threat to America in any significant way, really. I mean, except for the stay behind networks that could potentially exist here. But again, those are going
to America's threatening to bomb Lebanon.
Well, we have used our pressure to get the Lebanese government to try to disarm Hezbollah and to give up a large portion of their, sovereign land to Israel.
So I think maybe one driver of the apparent disconnect between us is not one of merit, it's one of perspective. So you obviously have a much better informed, a much broader perspective and view of things happening in the Middle East than I do. My view is much narrower. That doesn't mean it's better, but that could explain why we approach this problem from different directions. My entirely focus is what's in America's national interest. I couldn't give a shit what happens in the Middle East. I just don't care. What they do with themselves. I don't care what Lebanon does to Israel. I don't care what Israel does to Lebanon. It doesn't matter to me. I wish they would fix themselves and live in peace and not have people dying and murdering and killing and suffering all the time. That would be my preference. But I don't have any control over that. That's for them to determine their destiny and their part of the world. I only care about what happens in the Middle East to the extent that it becomes a threat to my nation.
Well, and then
I want that threat neutralized.
Absolutely. And that's where we definitely overlap, because the reason I'm so concerned about what's going on in the Middle East is because I do see how it informs and affects how we do things here. And I think obviously one of the big problems I've seen illustrated over the last couple of years, but especially in the last week, is the fact that there are a lot of people in America who seem to be making decisions on the basis of what's good for Israel. I mean, I think that's a major issue. And again, I just wonder if these decisions are even being made with our interest in mind.
You should have Ben Shapiro on the show. I'm sure that's his perspective, I would imagine. It's not my perspective, though. I don't speak in defense of Israel. I think Israel, like any nation, is going to pursue its own national interest. I think that's appropriate for any nation to do, but it's not of concern to me. And if they make bad decisions that have bad consequences for them, that's on Israel to deal with.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about when that affects, American behavior and the way American power is expressed. Yeah. Because, to me, I don't care, what Israel wants to do, except that there's a bunch of Israelis here that are going to, rope us along with them, right? I would prefer we don't have that. How do we solve that problem? Because then you don't have to care and I don't have to care. Neither one of us can care, have to care about the Middle East if they didn't drag their issues over here.
Yeah. So, I mean, American politics is messy, right? There's a lot of drivers of American politics. Israel, I expect, is among maybe the most powerful of those. Often it's difficult to see what the drivers are and how they're working because these are backdoor arrangements. I'm not suggesting that doesn't exist. I presume that does exist. All our NATO allies do this. Every nation, again, is acting in its own national interest or going to influence the U.S. in their national interest to the greatest extent possible. Maybe Israel's exceptionally good at that and good at making America act counter to our own interest because it's favorable to Israel. I'm amenable to that argument. The solution to that is to have different politicians. The solution to that is get rid of people who are amenable to that kind of corruption, whether it's from Israel or any other nation, and replace them with people who are less amenable to that kind of corruption. This applies to the legislatures who are using our tax money to pay off people that they've harassed in a variety of ways. It applies to our politicians who flood our nation with third world migrants, tens of millions of them who will never assimilate, never be Americans. All they do is make America less America. These are all terrible things that are happening. And the reason they're happening is because of the politicians we have. Frankly, I see in the Trump administration really the only avenue to have a hope of saving America. It doesn't mean I have to agree with everything Trump does. I certainly don't. But the Democrats are against our national interest. They are progressive fascists. They want us to be, they want to rule over us like a bunch of kings over a third world feudal society. The Republicans, the classic Republican Party, these are the John Thunes, the Cornyns in Texas. These are just rhinos. They don't really have America's interests at heart either. They have their own wallets at heart. They're happy to be loyal opposition to the Democrats, getting rich at the trough, never having to be in responsibility, never having to make hard decisions that might potentially have negative consequences for which they would have to take the heat. And then you have what's effectively a kind of third party. Now, third parties don't work in America. They've never worked, not since Ross Perot or any other time. But Trump has effectively launched a MAGA party, an American First Party, that is taking over the Republican Party. It's a slow process. It's a slow process because of the inherent nature of our governmental structure. You can only replace a congressman every 2 years, and the reelection rate's like 90, 95%. They're very difficult to unseat an incumbent. You only have a shot at a senator every 6 years, president every 4 years, federal judges never. Never, unless we get enough seats in the Senate to start throwing some of these federal judges out, which, God willing, will happen sometime in my lifetime. That would be enormous. But it takes a long time to change these people out. I see that happening in the Trump administration. I see better people coming in, replacing rhinos, displacing Democrats. And that's really my hope for the future. That's why I'm not a black pillar. It doesn't mean Trump's not going to make bad decisions. He does. It doesn't mean he's not going to make bad endorsements. He does. Nobody's perfect. Trump's not perfect either. But I try to look at these things directionally. Is the overall mass of direction, effort, inertia of direction moving where I want to see America move? And I have to say, I do see it doing that.
Well, I do too, in terms of the long-term view. That you're definitely right, as in, like, eventually the people that are in office now are going to die out and younger people are going to move in and they're going to be much more aligned with the MAGA, you know, Trump vision of things. But it seems like that's the long-term, like, tidal shift going on. But in the meantime, there's this constant back-and-forth battle where it seems to me like most of the good people from the Trump administration are not able to get what they need done. They're being pressured out. And the swamp is just, like, you know, latching onto him and pulling him in slowly. I mean, the fact that he's, like, best friends with Lindsey Graham now. So there's this, like, short-term kind of, like, infection from the swamp taking over MAGA. But over the long term, I think you're right that the groundswell impetus is certainly on the side of the not neocon, the nationalistic, youthful MAGA Americans. Is it going to happen fast enough? Like, I guess this is a race against time at this point.
Well, first of all, I have to say I completely agree on Lindsey Graham. I scream at my computer every time I see Trump standing next to Lindsey Graham. It drives me crazy. But that's not a new friendship. That's not the swamp coming in. He's always been in orbit around Trump. The change I see happening tends to be change in a good direction for America. I think Pete Hegseth is enormously better as Secretary of War than anybody we had under Biden or Obama or the Bushes, for that matter. I think Marco Rubio, who I didn't think much of as a senator from Florida, I think is just a tremendous, tremendous secretary. Whether you agree with his decisions or not, even if you disagree with him, you can't disagree with the expertise he's bringing to that office. He does what he's doing with great proficiency. Lindsey Graham, I will not be sad the day Lindsey Graham walks off the political stage for the last time. But the changes I'm seeing happen are changes in the right direction. And to me, that's very encouraging. I've never seen anything like it before. And the first president I ever voted for was Reagan. So I've been around a hot minute watching this stuff. And I really have hope for the future of America for the first time. And I'm far more than I had under Trump's first term, for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I've been trying to cling on to that hope. It's just it's been a disappointing year for me, Bronco. I mean, we're not getting any deportations. It's like it seems like things are falling off. Again, I agree that the trajectory and certainly the will of the American people is absolutely going in the right direction. It's just that it's the two-party system and the entrenched Republican interests that are really talented at exerting their priorities over the American people. But hopefully we can continue.
The judges are a real problem. The federal judges are a real problem. But again, we just had, was it yesterday? Just yesterday, a unanimous Supreme Court decision that checked the authority of the unelected, black-robed, tyrannical federal district trial court judges to impede deportations on asylum claims. I mean, again, that's another step in the right direction. But it is a war. America is in an existential war for survival. In any war, you're going to have wins and you're going to have losses. And what you're hoping for is you have more wins than you do losses. But the losses are going to come too. And we can't despair every time one of those happens, as long as we're moving directionally in the right movement.
I just want to stomp my enemies into the dirt. I don't want to lose. I want to win. But absolutely, I understand. This has been a surprisingly white-pilling conversation. Thank you very much. Andrew F. Bronca has been my guest at The Bronca Show on X, on YouTube as well, at The Bronca Show. When do you air? Daily?
Yeah, pretty much every day, 11 a.m. Eastern time. I live stream on YouTube, X, and Rumble.
There you go, 11 a.m. Thanks so much for being with us, sir.
Thanks, man. Take care.
You too. All right, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. This has been The War Room. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. It's the only way that we'll be here to have these types of conversations, talk about these types of topics. See you tomorrow.
We have it all. Ultramethylene Blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The Turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, procardiovascular, ultimate life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at theultramethylene.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for AutoShip. Cancel anytime. And you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Pitley to do this. They were a little skeptical because they like to give you good deals, but not this good because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information's hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.